I wouldn't say it's very difficult to discuss the film Snowden, because when I've watched it several times, and the only thing I really struggle with is to whether I think it's my personal favorite of Oliver Stone's films. I mean, there are still a few of his films I haven't seen. I mean, I think Savages is much better than people realize, even though it's a little insane. JFK, I mean, I've only seen it once, so you have to process a lot, but you can tell personally that it's given his own dedication to the subject of the JFK assassination. And I haven't seen his documentary, and I would love to see Ukraine on Fire, because that does sound very fascinating, and it does give light to the deeper roots of Ukraine and Russia conflict, more than what the media is allowing the public to know, or even speculate. But when it comes to Edward Snowden, in the 10 years following his declassification of him leaking the files that exposed that the United States government, aka the NSA, was, well, basically spying on American citizens illegally, I feel like we've kind of become desensitized and accustomed to the idea that it's okay for them to look at our information. You'd think that the revelation that a government was spying on its own citizens as opposed to its potential enemies would disturb an entire populace, but no. Even the fact that we've consented to this carries a certain irony to it, because, yes, every app, every device we give a manner of consent does basically say that we're allowing our information to be absorbed or just allowing ourselves to be open to this kind of surveillance. But I think one of the great things that Snowden, the film, presents is that, is it really consent? If that's the only option, if that's the only option we're given, is it really a choice? It's basically having a gun put to your face and being told, either I shoot you or you do everything I say without question, even if it's irrational. I know, it's a bizarre way of painting this scenario, but again, I'm more focused on the idea of how desensitized and even accustomed a populace has become to this idea, because one of the interesting things about Edward Snowden, and I mentioned this in another video, in another recording, where I explored and analyzed the notion of heroism assigned to whistleblowers, and how even that can be commodified or manipulated to the extent of the people that they are giving revelations towards. What I found very fascinating about Edward Snowden is that he constantly denies the idea that he's a hero. And there's no question that he's doing that because he understands that the issue he was discussing is much bigger than he is, because he doesn't want to be the focus of the story. He wants the story to be the focus. Clearly, the story here is that, is it right for a government to spy on its citizens? And if you want my personal opinion, I don't. Yes, there are. I understand that there are certain scenarios where absolute privacy can benefit the means of potentially evil people. I mean, I once listened to the Make It Sense podcast by Sam Harris, and he was discussing this in the sense that, where do we draw the line, especially when it comes to child pornography and pedophilia? And that's true. It's clearly an interesting lane to explore, but that doesn't change the fact that you can't use that excuse just to simply allow absolute surveillance of every citizen. I don't think it's an easy scenario to solve, but still, that just feels like an easy cop-out. It's very similar to the God exists argument. Like when you say, if you were to debate with somebody who believes in God, if you were to have someone who doesn't believe in God debating with a person who does believe in God, and you ask them, well, if God created the universe, who created God? And they say God was always there. But they can't even prove that, because they have no way of truly knowing. They're just making assumptions, but then they contradict themselves when they say, that they can't know the mind of God because it's a convenient way of navigating the argument without feeling like they've compromised. And I think the mass surveillance subject carries the same approach. At the same time, when it comes to a figure like Edward Snowden, what I find fascinating about the film Snowden is there's one moment in the film that really strikes me, and I guess I can relate to it because, I mean, I'm not comparing myself to the intelligence or the technical expertise of Edward Snowden, but clearly you can tell he's a person who is very intelligent, but also the introverted, shy type. Very personal, has specific tastes, and has a different way of looking at the world, much more introspectively. And again, I don't want to compare my intelligence to his. I think he is a vastly more intelligent person than I could ever be. But there's a moment where he says people can navigate, can cruise through life happily. Why can't I? And I actually discussed this with a friend once, and he said, because he's not a fucking crook. That's true. Edward Snowden is not a crook. But, same time, that statement alone illustrates that he is very self-aware and self-conscious of the many contradictions that people often ignore or gradually accept because it's much easier, more secure. And even the debate of security versus liberty is presented before Snowden. And this film came out in the year 2016, right around the presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And ironically, another film came out which presented the same argument, and that would be Captain America: Civil War, which although is a more action-packed superhero film, but it did present the similar argument with the conflict between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, and how one chose security and the other one chose liberty. The idea of having the freedom to make a decision as opposed to having it taken from you. And there's actually a moment in Snowden where Reese Effin's character says, people don't want freedom. People really don't want freedom. They prefer security. And it's interesting because although I do believe that people love freedom, it's made me question whether they really do prefer security. Or maybe they just prefer security because they've deluded themselves into believing that is the closest they'll get to any real sense of freedom. The freedom to feel like they're secure. Which is ironic because if they're choosing security but sacrificing freedom, they're essentially closing themselves off. They're closing off not just their ability to make decisions, but they're also closing off their ability to perceive the world in a much more open-minded way. I mean, I might be delving a little deeper than I should, especially for a film like Snowden, which is based off true events, and it's not like it's discussing something Matrix or something of the Matrix, but again, you then have to, when you think of the Matrix, you think of the idea of the simulation. In previous podcast episodes, whether it was in film reviews or interviews of filmmakers, I did discuss the idea of the Matrix, but only from the context of what is a simulation. A simulation is just basically a narrative. And let's be honest, we are a species of storytellers. We form narratives as a way of crafting the way we navigate our lives. And this goes beyond the Joseph Campbell, you're the hero of your own story kind of concept. It's a lot much deeper than that. Because when we turn on the news, we're gradually accepting whatever narrative is presented before us. Well, we're being presented with some type of narrative. Whether it's true or not is irrelevant. But if we're just simply watching the narrative, it becomes irrelevant. Because it's just a narrative that's presented before us. And it can go one direction that day, and then the next day, if it's the same narrative, it can be weaved in a totally different direction than intended. It all depends on the intention. And clearly, the film Snowden's intention is to openly illustrate to people the question of whether it is truly right, whether security is much more important than freedom. In this case, the concept of security is more focused on the idea that if we allow the government to basically spy on us, read our emails, read our text messages, listen to our phone calls, and even remotely turn on the cameras or microphones in our electronic devices as a way of maintaining surveillance over us while still promising as a means of safety. Nah, maybe I lost my train of thought there, but again, it just presents it as to whether it is morally right just because it accesses a form of security, but at the end of the day, it's not really a form of security because it's like making a deal with the devil and expecting him to be honorable in a sense. But really, at the end of that kind of situation, it's the government that has the one with the guns, and you're just nodding your head and hoping they don't fire it. But again, there is no guarantee. It's like a person, it's like that moment in Inception where Leonardo DiCaprio's character, because Inception has been interpreted a multitude of ways in its more metaphorical aspects regarding the subject of dreams and reality. There's a moment where Leo DiCaprio's character asks Ken Watanabe, who presents him with the offer of, how would you like to go back to home, to America? And he says, even if I could perform Inception, I'd need a guarantee that I could. You can't. I'm asking you to take a leap of faith. And yes, in that situation, it's a leap of faith of trusting the man that can give him what he wants, but on a deeper philosophical notion, it's basically the leap of faith of accepting and embracing life, embracing the chaos that ultimately illustrates what defines it in its purest essence. I mean, look, I'm a big privacy advocate. Most of the apps I use are alternatives. They don't... I mean, they're built not to track me. They're built on some form of encryption that protects my data. But at the same time, I'm smart enough to know that there's no such thing as an uncrackable form of encryption. But I also know that I'd rather have as much protection as possible, but I fully acknowledge that it is not foolproof. And I think you should embrace that. That's why I love Snowden. I mean, both Edward Snowden and the movie Snowden. As to whether I think Edward Snowden is a hero, well, I think what he did is heroic. I don't think he's proselytizing himself or promoting himself as a hero. I think he cares more about the subject than what happens to him. And the fact that he'd be openly willing to go back to the United States to stand trial, well, a fair trial, because let's be clear, the Espionage Act is basically like a zero-sum game law invented to basically criminalize whistleblowers. So it's just a way of... I'm sorry, this part actually frustrates me a lot, because when certain representatives say that Edward Snowden is a traitor and he should just man up and face responsibility, they're basically asking him to put his head on a guillotine and expect it not to fall over the backside of his neck. And that's just absurd, because he's essentially playing in a zero-sum game where he is guaranteed to lose no matter what. I mean, for those of you following what's happening to Julian Assange, I think we all know that his extradition to the United States can only be delayed for so long and act as a form of optimism that I think I'm not too optimistic about his fate. I wish I could be, because I have a lot of admiration for who he is and the courage he took, because I don't know if I could ever I'm going to be blatantly honest and, saying that I don't know if I would have that type of courage, because I don't have the skill set they have. I don't think I would even have the resources, even the limited resources they had. Because some would say that Julian Assange was crafty, and yes, he was, going to the Ecuadorian embassy, but at the same time, if you see the footage of I don't know how many years he spent in the Ecuadorian embassy, but just enough time to showcase that, who knows what that did to his mind, what kind of person must he have become, being in a place like that for so long, where he had even a very limited means of accessing the outside world. because that would just basically fuck him over. And the same goes with Edward Snowden. I mean, where he is in Russia. And God knows what it must be like for him not to have to go, to be unable to go to the home he was raised in, even very, very much patriotic about, because the film doesn't present Snowden as this guy who was willing to go against the U.S. government in the beginning. He was very patriotic. He considered himself a traditional conservative. I mean, he came from a family that was very well ingrained in the military. And there was something very interesting about Edward Snowden talking about how his mother actually works for a part of the state that is actually trying to jail him. I'm not saying that she's trying to, but there's some ironic poetry in that, because it's the very country he loves that is trying to put him in prison. So, I mean, I don't see the film Snowden as a tragic movie. I actually see it as a triumph, because the fact that he was able to bring light to this issue did wake up a lot of people who are talking about it. Because although I mentioned earlier in this review that there is something very bizarre about how people have, a majority of people have grown accustomed to this idea that it's okay that an institution like the U.S. government is listening to our phone calls, reading our emails, and accumulating metadata from our electronic devices. And the only defense they have is that it's for our protection, to combat terrorism, to continue the endless ongoing war on terror that they fail to understand or fail to clarify is pure bullshit, because you can't wage a war on terror. Terror is a concept. It's basically an abstract war. And abstract wars can justify a war as being a continuation of a war if it's an abstraction. But because most people won't see that distinction or be able to clearly look at it with an introspective mindset, people with power can manipulate and even reconstruct the narrative and how it could just keep going and going to a point where even when we conquer one enemy, all we have to do is just invent a new one for the show to go on. And again, that's the very sad thing about it, how easily people can be manipulated, for these same devices and these... Sorry about that, I had to take a call. But anyway, as I was saying... Oh, Christ, I actually lost my train of thought of what I was saying. Well, I guess the closest way I can retouch on this topic was that the idea that the U.S. government is looking at these devices and accumulating metadata is not exactly a comforting thought, because they still... The idea that they can create a new enemy and use it as a way of promising us a form of safety that involves sacrificing our personal freedoms is the major issue that Snowden tackles and presents and introduces the conversation. And, I mean, I've mentioned the statement from Oliver Stone before, but I do love the interview he did while promoting Snowden on Stephen Colbert. And I guess that's when Stephen Colbert was starting to become a fucking whore for the state. But there was a statement Oliver Stone made, and I'll put the link down below, about how we kind of live in a Disneyland reality. And he's talking about the United States, in a sense, where we live in this culture of comfort where we assume that we're the greatest country in the world, and that we got nothing to worry about, and that somehow, because we have a sense of security, there's nothing really to worry about. I mean, we're bombarded with all forms of information to the point where we can easily be engineered or socially manipulated into believing that somehow the way things are is natural. And I guess a good example of this is political elections. I mean, whether it's right or left, at the end of the day, any dissidents are discredited or discouraged or even personally attacked, to the sense that they either become part of the establishment or they're ostracized to a degree where we're only given two choices. And usually the choice is in the scenario of the lesser of two evils. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I won't lie. I fell for that myself when I voted for Joe Biden, thinking that Trump was the greater evil. I mean, and I'm not defending Trump and saying I've come to realize that he was the lesser of two evils, because at the end of the day, evil's evil. And the idea of choosing between the lesser of two evils is something I've grown to understand that I can't abide by anymore. Look, I can sympathize with the idea of a person having to choose from a bucket of bad options, but when the options are so fucking bad that it's just morally antiquated to that extent, yeah, it just only makes me more cynical and more sympathetic and understanding of what Oliver Stone was saying, that the idea that we live in this Disneyland reality is the only way that we can get through, rather than accepting the brutal reality that the people in power don't necessarily give a damn for us, and that they can easily manipulate us and even pit us against one another because it's a good distraction. Look at the multitude of topics that are now surging throughout the culture, like a gender dysphoria or Black Lives Matter or equity reimbursement. They're all distractions. And look, there are a lot of minorities out there that have been mistreated. There are a lot of crimes that have been perpetuated on all sorts of groups, and it's unfair. But the people who basically promote and just blow the horn on these issues are not necessarily interested in them, because if they were able to actually solve them, which they could, I mean, just look how much money he's put in the military as opposed to healthcare, education, or even infrastructure, you know they're not really interested in helping. They're just interested in keeping these the noise of these issues alive enough as a means of distraction. Hence, the moral virtue signaling itself can become part of the Disneyland fantasy reality that further perpetuates and manipulates a populace into waging war against itself. Because, and I guess I got this from Jimmy Dore, the comedian, who has constantly openly stated that he's a lefty, but he is willing to side with right-wingers, libertarians, centrists, leftists, anybody. Because at the end of the day, he is smart. He is self-aware enough to understand that the real enemy is the very establishment that manipulates a populace of a multitude of sides as a means of distraction. I mean, just the idea that there are two sides debating whether Edward Snowden is a hero or a villain or a traitor is not just stupid, but it's a good way of basically putting greater distractions. And he himself said this, that whenever someone like him comes out with a revelation of this significance, it isn't him. It isn't the story. It not only distracts from the story, but by making him the focus of the story or something they did in their past, just showcases how effective their manipulation of language and information can be. By making him the subject of the story or something he did in his past that was considered either inappropriate or unconventional is a very effective psychological tool. And that's why I like the movie Snowden. It brings the awareness of this issue that whether he is a hero or a villain or whether he would be willing to face trial or not, ultimately points back to the issue about having a clean conscience, about coming out and revealing a truth that we either didn't know or come to accept, and even become so desensitized by that we're willing to accept it, so just for the sake of comfort. And as I said, I'm not morally virtue signaling that I would have the courage to do what Edward Snowden did, because I don't know how resourceful I would be in that situation where it would just be a futile effort. But again, I think that's what I like this movie a lot, and I think it's probably the most personal film Oliver Stone has made outside of his JFK series, if you want to call it that. I mean, he's only made two films centered on F. Kennedy. I mean, JFK with Kevin Costner, which is a film I highly recommend for anybody who hasn't seen it, and it's a long burn because it's like 3 hours long. And then there's JFK Revisited Through the Looking Glass, a documentary, and I haven't seen that. I heard it's even longer. So supposedly, I'm not entirely sure. And I know he's made a recent one on nuclear power. Anyway, I'm running out of ways to speculate on the intellectual depths and curiosities of a subject matter I know interests a lot of people, but definitely requires a lot more discussion, and hopefully one day, if anybody's willing to come on the podcast, discuss film, or even discuss a specific film like Snowden and the many factors that give it so much complexity, hell, you're welcome to message me via my social media channels or even email, which I have on my Spotify for podcasters link. Oh, fuck, I forgot to mention the sponsors of this podcast. Well, I mean, now that I'm back to my whoring mode, I might as well say that the sponsors of this podcast include Spotify for Podcasters, which is a podcasting app that allows you to create your own podcast and distribute it across multiple platforms. Whether we're talking about Apple, Spotify, Lisbon, CurioCaster, Podfreeze, and even the second sponsor of this podcast, Fountain, which is a podcasting app that allows you to earn Bitcoin while you listen to your favorite podcasters. It's pretty much like as if you were to go to the movies and not only not pay for a ticket, but instead get paid to watch the movie, in a sense. Anyway, in addition to the sponsors of this podcast, I've left some Bitcoin buying links down below, particularly Fold and Swan Bitcoin, where you can purchase Bitcoin and then have it frozen for a matter of days before being able to withdraw it into the safety of a hardware wallet. And for those of you curious to know about Bitcoin hardware wallets, you're free to ask me questions via email. And I guess that's about it. Oh, I didn't mention Fold. I mean, for those of you who like buying gift cards and earning rewards, Fold is the perfect app for that, because whether you're buying something from Amazon, Whole Foods, Instacart, DoorDash, and many other outlets, Fold allows you to buy a gift card in any of those outlets and earn Bitcoin rewards and Satoshis. Okay, now that I've finished trying to prove I am the worst salesman in the world, I hope you all enjoy this episode of Open Door Films. I hope it got you to think deeply about an issue I've grown to care about and speculate on for the multitude of times I've watched Snowden, because it is probably one of my among Oliver Stone's best works. And till next time.